Well, let me start with the little section of the verse from the. Can you hear okay? Also, a spot up here might be helpful if it's hard for you. So, okay. I've been hanging out with this section, so I thought I would kind of share it with you a little bit. The more you talk and think about it, the further you wander away from the truth. Stop talking. Stop thinking. And there is nothing that you would not be able to know. To return to the root is to find meaning. But to pursue appearances is to miss the source. At the moment of inner enlightenment, there is a going beyond appearances and going beyond emptiness. The changes that appear to occur in this empty world we call real only because of our ignorance. The changes that appear to occur in the empty world we call real only because of our ignorance. Do not search for the truth. Only cease to cherish your opinions. Pretty straight on. Thank you, Michelle.
You did that to your own.
All right. Okay.
You realize that it's going to be a mountain of paper clips.
Yes, I know.
By the end.
I know. I did remove some. I was attached to the paper clip, so.
You were lost and now you're found.
I was lost and now found. Okay. Well, first of all, I just want to say that for me, I think the Ango in general and the this poem in particular that we're studying together, we're looking at together, for me, it's not just about the text. You know, it's not just about the poem. I mean, the poem's important, but for me, what I'm enjoying and what I appreciate is the sharing in our community of what we're learning from the Sense in Ming, from the verse on faith mind. And what it teaches us as a community, you know, how it helps us grow as a community if we're talking to each other, learning and sharing, you know, then we all benefit from it. Reading this poem myself over and over again, I was reminded again about how often I turn my own attention outward too much. Very strong conditioning to want to turn outward. And by outward, I mean, even after all these years of practice, to be searching for something, getting caught and still searching for something that is outside myself. I still get caught up in that. Get caught up in wanting something to be a certain way. Caught up in how I think it should be. Wanting something I know I can count on. Something reliable, for God's sakes. You know, something that, you know, is sure. But the poem tells us that words and thinking, words and notions, are miles away from actual reality. Or from the direct experience of something, the taste of something. the actual taste of something. That the brain, of course, the brain and the eyes, of course, create a picture of reality for us. And for, of course, each one of us, the picture is slightly different. Our brains are different. Our perceptions are different. The way things come together are different. Each one of us sees reality in a slightly different way. Nobody sees things the same. Nobody. I remember talking to Roshi about this years ago when we were going talking about this, and he said, "Well, Ray, I'm colorblind. I don't see the world like you see the world. I have no idea what your red color is like. I have mine, you have yours. We see things differently. We move in the world in a different way." It's true. Not just colorblind, old eyes versus young eyes. How clear we see things, how far away or how close, how blurry, how clean, how clear. Our peripheral vision, I mean, everybody sees the world in a different way. The changes that appear to occur in the empty world, it says, we call real because of our ignorance, because we don't realize these kind of things, and we get caught up in the appearances of things and then live them out as if they were true. As somebody once said to me, just because it feels real doesn't mean it's true. Just because it feels real, it doesn't necessarily mean it's true. Which meant to me that everything is very impermanent. Everything is also in a constant state of flux and change. A flowing stream of experiences that each one has differently than the next. That there is nothing that I can hold on to securely. So when I was thinking about this and I wrote down this statement, of course, the greatest teaching for me and the greatest teaching for you, if you have ever had it, is home renovation. Mm-hmm. If you want to have your assumptions crashed on the rocks, then start home renovation. They told us it would take 4 weeks, and we believed them. Yeah. It's been 6. They told us that there would not be any problems. But on the first day of construction, they opened up a wall and found a nest of yellow jackets in the wall and had to clear the place out until they could find an exterminator. We ordered and believed that we were getting new honey maple flooring. But black oak came in. Today, well, I want to talk about this a little bit. Project manager, his name is Fred, a wonderful fellow, wonderful guy, came in with his, I think it's a leveler, just make sure things are
right. Little things on the middle.
The leveler, it's called. You know. And I watched him, because I was in the other room with the door closed, you know, with all of our stuff piled in boxes, trying to stay safe in there with my little cup of coffee, you know, And I opened the door to see Fred with his leveler going around all the cabinets that don't have countertops yet. There's Fred walking around saying, "Fred, what's wrong?" "Well, Ray," he said, "I wasn't here yesterday, and the fellow who I brought in, who was fairly new, put the cabinets in crooked. I have to take them all out and redo them so that they're straight." And I said, "Fred, you must be freaking out." I said, "You know, you've got to do this whole thing over again." I said, "How is this for you?" And he said to me, "Ray, if I get caught up in what should be, or if I get caught up in what I think is going to be, I'm doomed. And I said, this is verse in faith and mind, the verse of faith mind. This is about understanding attachment and expectations and disappointments. And I said, well, how do you deal with that? Because you must find these kind of things on every job. And he said, I do. And I can't hold out the expectation. I said, well, that's really interesting given this talk I'm giving. So what do you do, Fred? What do you do instead? And he said, I have to come into each job every morning and I look at it fresh. I look at it fresh. When I walked in today with the leveler, I checked it out and I saw it was not okay, and I have to approach it fresh each morning when I come in to see what's here in front of me, what's here in front of me, and address it. And I said, holy shit, this guy's a Zen teacher, a carpenter, a master. He's a master carpenter. And his work is artistic, and he's interested in the art of the work, not just getting it done and pushing something through and getting out without any kind of feeling or importance to it. And I said, well, you've really helped me out in the talk I want to give tonight, Fred, because it's exactly about that. So you see, as I was saying this a couple of weeks ago, you know, this poem is, and for the third patriarch, this writing was not some simple, idealistic spiritual talk. It was about a talk that was based on the fact that he was a homeless fellow who was dealing with leprosy, struggling, wandering, a regular guy stuck. And I said, well, this is about all of us in some way, whatever our situation is, all of us are dealing with these kind of things. So I wanted to share this with you to really kind of stress the importance of this being a teaching that is applicable to us in our everyday life. Fred, the project manager and carpenter who comes in, and he'll come in again tomorrow morning with his leveler, and he'll check it all to make sure it's done right, understanding that if it's not, he will start fresh and address what's right in front of him and take care of it as the best he can. So I said to Fred, well, Fred, listen, you got to get exasperated about this. And he said, I do. But I can't let it get me down. Otherwise, I'll never be able to do this job. So it does bother me. It affects me. I don't know that this young fellow is going to stay with our company because he didn't do a thorough job. But I got to take care of this, and I can't let it overwhelm me. Otherwise, I'm dead. I'll never be able to be a project manager, going from one job to the next. Which made me think about this verse, which talks about the fact that it's not that we shouldn't have preferences, it's that it's about not attaching to those preferences. It's not, you know, of course he's exasperated, of course we're exasperated, of course we would like things to be better. He would have liked things to go smoothly. But when they don't, he understands the nature of that. And although he has preferences like we do, I like red, you like blue, he has not let it get to him. And I said, this is marvelous to me. How do we work with that? How do we work with that in our own life then? So this poem became very practical today for me, much more practical and real because of Master Carpenter Fred. I guess we can say we do the same kind of thing with enlightenment, right? I mean, you know, I came into this practice searching for enlightenment. I wanted it, and my delusion was, my ignorance was, which I think most of us come in with, that sense of enlightenment was outside of me that I had to go and to get. So I was searching for it, pushing for it, looking for it, doing whatever I could to get it, as if it was something I didn't already have. I didn't know that I had it, so I had to start by wanting to go get it. But luckily, I was with a teacher who stopped me and said, "Well, you already have it. What are you looking for?" Of course, I didn't believe I had it, but I was willing to trust him and to say, "Let me go with what he's saying and see what happens." If I have faith in the teaching, faith in him, if I trust him enough. So I think there's always this notion of searching that's going on, searching going on, searching going on, that we have to work with. Otherwise, I think we really suffer. I want her to have a special practice. Now, Suzuki Roshi gave a talk about this. You know, many, many years ago, I was listening when we had tapes. I played a Suzuki Roshi tape player in my car. And he said that we all come to the practice wanting to feel special. And that most of the people who leave practice hold on to that notion, and when they don't feel like they get it, they go, never knowing that they already have it. And like Fred, he helped to remind me that the way we find it is knowing that we already have it and then seeing it in the most ordinary things, in the most ordinary things in this world. It's nothing special. It's in the way we walk, it's in the way we sit, it's in the way we eat, it's in the flowers in our garden, it's the clouds, it's all around us. If we take the time to sit and drop our preferences so that something else can open, that wisdom can open, that is beyond differences, beyond differences. And so Fred was a great teaching when he said, "Well, if I were to come in here expecting how something was going to be or expecting how it wasn't going to be, I'd be in trouble. I have to come in fresh and see what's in front of me and then take care of that." It was beautiful. So Carolyn and I started a little bit of practice together. We got this from being down in Cape May, because if you're in Cape May and you live there for any period of time, it's called Cape Maybe. Right? Cape Maybe. And the locals will say, "Oh, this is Cape Maybe." All you have to do is say, "Excuse me, listen, I was waiting for this electrician to come in, and he's supposed to be here at 8, but it's 9 o'clock. Oh, it's Cape Maybe. Maybe he'll show, maybe he won't." They didn't know it's also Italian time. You know, "Hey, what's the rush?" Cape Maybe. So Carolyn and I went, since we've had one thing after another that has changed right before our eyes that we were holding on to, started saying, "Well, honey, do we have the reservation for tonight?" "Maybe." "Are you going to speak to people at work today, later on?" "Oh, maybe." "We'll see. Let's deal with what's right in front of us. You know, right now, let's just have our breakfast, because that's what's right in front of me right now." I think that's kind of the essence, I think, of what this verse is trying to show us, to put down the attachment to the preferences and then go with what's right here and now. Be with what's right here and now. That's where the Dharma is. It's not somewhere else. It's not in enlightenment and delusion. It's not. Forget enlightenment and forget delusion. They're concepts. Concepts. Better to serve somebody who's right in front of you. So that's all I have to say. But I wanted to when I started this evening, I was saying about our community, and I wanted to kind of put out a question, which is, how do you see this for yourself in your own life? Don't ask me questions. I don't want any questions. I don't want it to be hierarchical, like you have the questions and I have the answers, or she has the answers and you have the questions. I want to know how you see it in your own life. What's your answer? How do you work with this? You all know it. You all know it. You've all gone to the dealership when you've had expecting a part to come in to find out that it wasn't delivered, or is the wrong part, even though you gave them the right model number three times. What do you do with that? So I'm kind of asking in these next few minutes if you can share a little bit of your own experience of how this works for you, and how do you work with it in a way that may not create a lot more suffering, or maybe you've had a lot of suffering with it. And I'm interested. Jackie, yeah?
What really stuck out for me today, it's election day, was do not, I just drew a blank, to stop cherishing opinions. Do not seek the truth, stop cherishing opinions. Yeah. You know, because I love the word cherish there, it's like I have opinions, but stop cherishing them when perhaps the person I believe should win does not win. You know, that I know I'm right and that the side is right.
Of course.
You know? So I found that sort of affirming today, going into the election, just carrying things a little more loosely.
Yes.
You know, that I can have an opinion, but I don't need to cherish it. Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
So isn't that hard to do? Mm-hmm. And I find that, to me, that's a difficult thing to do, because it's your opinion. You know, it comes from deep within you. Maybe you don't have an opinion, strong opinion. So I guess, I struggle with this in that, we talk about non-attachment. It's easy to say, but how do you execute on that? Right? It comes, these feelings come, your mind and your ego just kind of, it comes out and there it is.
Yeah.
And you're attached to it.
Yeah.
So, how do we say, well, don't be attached to it? You really are attached to it. We see it, and maybe over time it starts to wane. But I don't know how to, not attach to it, and then not care.
Yeah, yeah. In my own experience with that, I have tried to learn that the idea of non-attachment is an attachment. So, right? So I was trying to say this a couple of weeks ago that we use our practice as refuge. So we build an awareness. I can build an awareness of seeing when the attachment comes. So maybe I don't get caught in it for a year. Maybe I just get caught in it for a week, or a day, or 10 days, instead of a lifetime, And it's every time we see it and work with it and then let it go, it's happened, we notice it, because we have a practice that brings our attention to this. And then we practice letting it go again and see how that feels. What if I let it go? What would that be like? What if I don't have to have you think like me? What a concept. So I think we start to kind of slowly practice that over time, a little bit at a time. And maybe we get a little better at it. I think it's kinder to work that way than the expectation that I should be able to not have any attachments. I don't think it's possible. If I were to say anything to you, to everybody about it, I would say, please be kind. We're not going to be so perfect. Just raising our consciousness day by day. And I'm lucky that if when I get caught in it, Carolyn taps me on the shoulder and says, hey, man, let go. Oh, thank you, honey. I didn't see that one coming. Thank you. And we slowly work together with this. That's what I think the beauty of a community is, right? When we can talk about these things and we can help each other through them, because they're difficult. nice and easy. So, yeah, Matt.
Like Fred at work, there's for me, there's a million things that have to happen in order at a certain time for things to go smoothly. And often they don't. Mm-hmm. And yeah, over the years, I have learned to just say, okay, there's a problem. Let's not get like emotional about it. Let's just kind of figure it out. Let's just move on. Where I think my suffering comes from is that because I'm always expecting there's going to be a problem, I'm obsessively planning in my head to try to avoid those. So although I feel like I've grown in the sense that I can let things go, there's still the sense of me that wants to try to control everything. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good to see that, I think. I mean, really, the change, right? You don't get a change before you see something, and then you can start to work it through in a new way. So that's really a wonderful progress, I think, that if I'm really seeing this better, you know, where I do get hooked.
Yeah.
And then I can, hopefully it doesn't take, you know, again, a year and a half, but maybe a week and a half.
Okay.
I mean, wouldn't that be nice? So, yeah, George, yeah.
Since I've been studying it, I think about the poem periodically throughout the day in the strangest places and times. I mean, I keep it at my office at my desk, and you know, just certain times during the day, I'll read a few stanzas. And it's a little bit boring, if I'm being honest. It seems to repeat the same thing over and over again.
It does. 32 times, actually.
Yeah.
32, there's 32 dualities that are mentioned, because I counted them. 32 different, you know, right and wrong, up and down, back and forth, good and bad. So
I'm conscious of it throughout the day, and it does bring a real peacefulness and calm that I've noticed. I went to the Jets game on Sunday, and I had six kids in the car, and it took 90 minutes to go about a quarter of a mile in the traffic, and I was fine. You know, 2 years ago it would have been, we're out of here, and it was just, I thought about the way with a capital W, and just turned on the radio, told stories, laughed. And it was, I reflected upon it afterwards, and it was just remarkable. So I just a sense of reinforcing just acceptance. Mm-hmm. With that comes just great peace and calm.
Yeah, that's sweet. Yeah.
And the Jets mom.
yeah, sensei.
Yeah, I actually have a, there's for me, there's something that you should use comfort in. That way, because there is a lot of redundancy. But the thing is, like, when I think of the poet who wrote this, because it's so practical. See, I really gravitate to things that are practical. Things that are too esoteric, I just not interested. So I'm thinking, I'm seeing this guy who wrote this poem, like you and me.
Mm-hmm.
He had to do it over, 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 and that's our practice. It's over, 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 over. So when you're reading the poem, I'm like, okay, what are Ray and I going to talk about? It's like duality. It's like, you know, it has to be knocked into your brain that the duality is what causes us to suffer. Right, wrong, opinions, not opinions. And even with, like, opinions, you know, like judgments and all this, I'm starting to think of them as just thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
They're only thoughts. They're not us, mm-hmm. You know, and so that I can see some of my opinions, I don't have such an attachment anymore to the opinions because I don't see them as me anymore. I see them as thoughts that are, here's this thought of it. It's just the thought, you know, and like you said the other day, you know, when you allow the thoughts to be there, when you're meditating, You know, you can be serene because you're not fighting against them. And I think that was very insightful because that's how I see the preferences. If you keep encountering them and encountering them, after a while, you start to break down a little bit. You know what I mean? The whole thing starts to break down a little. You see how ridiculous it is. You know, and you can get mad at yourself, you know, if you want to, but here's this guy who wrote this really long poem and he just stayed with it and stayed with it. And those are the people in Zen who find their way because they just keep at it, you know? And so good for you all.
Yeah, that's great. Do we have time for one? Yeah, Sheila, one more, yeah.
I love this poem. And I see, I am seeing my preferences all over the place. But not like, it's just like, oh, here it is. Just like you were saying, it's just again and again and again. And I wasn't even aware of it. And then just really, you know, being curious about like, what is this? What is this preference? What is it? And just looking at it. Same way, like when we were going through the precepts and looking at anger, because that's kind of my thing. And so like looking at it and then like being with it, allowing it. I don't have to be some perfect spiritual little being like I'm never going to be, which has also been my thing. And to just allow these preferences, okay, it's here. This is what's happening right here, right now. And to be with it and see it, and then it just like opens up, just like the anger. It's like my doorway. It's like these preferences. If I work with them and I look at them and I allow them, I feel like it's my doorway in, inside. You know.
Great. That's very sweet. Yeah. Very important stuff. That's real practice.
What?
That's real practice.
Yeah.
That's real practice. It's great. So let's. I'm really happy to be back here. I hopefully that by next week, unless half the house sags. But I hopefully will be here either next week or very soon. So once they put the appliances back.
And, you go with the wood oak?
I'm sorry?
Are you going with the oak floors? Or are you going to...
Hold on. Yeah, we had it worked out. I worked it out. It's, you know, I said,
just
hey, I want.
You're supposed to have black.
Oh, God. All right. Thank you, everyone. Let's sit.